92.9 Podcasts, powered by Action 24/7. Tennessee's only local legal sports book. Bet now at action247.com. 92.9 FM ESPN presents the area's only national columnist who spends his afternoons bringing unique perspective to Memphis radio. He'll make you think. He'll make you laugh. He'll sometimes make you change the station if children are around. And he apologizes in advance for that. It's 4 o'clock. Let's get into it. This is the Gary Parrish Show.
I'm here. My name's Gary Parrish, speaking to you from Memphis, Tennessee. Ben Adolph's producing the program. Glad he's with me. Glad you're with me. Hope you're getting through the day best you can. Daddy lost most everything. On horse, whiskey, and wedding rings. I hope you were listening yesterday when we told you how disrespectful it was that the odds makers had made the Grizzlies an underdog inside their building in downtown Memphis against the Denver Nuggets team that we just watched them beat two nights earlier. Is it take the points? Take a money line bet? Double up.
I did, thank God.
Double up. Worked out perfectly. We needed a nice performance from Jaren Jackson Jr. We got a nice performance from Jaren Jackson Jr., one that included a contested shot while he was guarding the reigning MVP of the NBA at the buzzer. Then the streamers went out. Nice night for the Grizz. Nice start to the season for the Grizz. We'll talk about it momentarily. First, though, quickly, let me set this afternoon's schedule for you. 4:20, Stuart Mandel is going to join me. Covers college football for The Athletic. So I'll talk to Stu about a number of things, including this week's unveiling of the college football playoff ranking. Stuart Mandel is going to be here right around 4:20 in the next segment. When I finish that, I'll take a break, come back, do four notable stories at 4:44, at which point I'll discuss four previously undiscussed stories. Among them, more details have emerged about the woman who burned to death in her vehicle after former Raiders receiver Henry Ruggs ran into her while driving 156 miles per hour early Tuesday. I'll share some of those details with you around 4:44. Odell Beckham Jr. was excused from practice for the second consecutive day this afternoon. Awkward situation in Cleveland. Get you updated on that deal a little later on this hour. Incredible reporting from Baxter Holmes at ESPN earlier today. A story focused on Robert Sarver, who seems like a pretty miserable human being. We might have another forced ownership change in the NBA. Wild allegations in Phoenix. I'll tell you about those just before 5 o'clock. And Rick Barnes told reporters earlier today that John Fulkerson, one of his veteran front court standouts, might not be available to open the season. So the Tennessee Vols already dealing with injury issues. I'll tell you more about that during four notable stories at 4:44. 5 o'clock, Jeff Calkins, just like always, then I'll eventually do dinner to go and get on out of here. So that's the rundown. Got a lot to get to, but I did want to start with the Memphis Grizzlies, because the Grizz won another basketball game last night inside FedEx Forum. Final score was 108-106. So that's two wins in a span of 3 days over Nikola Jokic and the Denver Nuggets. Big Ben Bennett, are you surprised that the Grizzlies have become a team some NBA insiders are now calling the Denver Nuggets' worst nightmare?
No, I'm not surprised, because it was crystal clear over those past two games that when the reigning MVP Nikola Jokic is not on the floor, that is not a good basketball team. And at least they don't match up with the Grizzlies.
It should be noted they're missing one of their best players.
Yeah, of course.
In Jamal Murray, but still, no excuse. This is a no excuses situation,
right,
Bennett.
Right.
Let's play word association.
Okay. I like this.
Grizzlies. What's the first thing that pops into your head?
Fun.
No. Denver's worst nightmare.
Oh, okay. Well, I thought it was just one word.
Sometimes
you
I
said word association. You're supposed to do one word in word association.
Rephrased. Let's play three word association.
Okay.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Grizzlies.
Denver's worst nightmare.
You're damn right. Denver's worst nightmare. The Grizz beat the Nuggets by 9 points on Monday night. Last night, a little closer, just a 2-point win. But a win is a win is a win, especially when it's also a cover. And it's even nicer when it's a win featuring an encouraging performance from Jaren Jackson Jr. The fourth year forward out of Michigan State was good last night in multiple ways.
Yeah.
22 points, 8 rebounds, 3 blocks, 2 assists. He was 7 of 14 from the field, 5 of 9 from beyond the arc, 2 of 5 inside the arc. So he was a better percentage from 3 than 2, but he was better from both than he's been much of the season. And he had a really nice moment in the final second. So the Grizzlies are up 2. John Morant had just made 1 of 2 free throws. So it's Denver ball, and naturally, you know they're going to Jokic.
Yep.
He's the reigning most valuable player of the NBA. He's going to get this shot. So Jaren's guarding him, and Jaren contests without fouling. Contests without fouling.
Yep.
Guarding the MVP, managed not to foul. Jokic had about 11-footer. It missed short. Horn sound, streamer shoot. The Grizzlies win it by a bucket after overcoming what was a 5-point deficit to start the fourth quarter. And the reason they were able to overcome that 5-point deficit to start the fourth quarter, the main reason at least, was Jaren Jackson Jr. 9 of his 22 points, 5 of his 8 rebounds, and 1 of his 3 blocks were in the final quarter. So this doesn't mean that this is what you're going to get every night. Although I do think it is what you'd like to get every night someday.
Yes, and when I talked to Drew about it last week, because obviously he's been a big topic of discussion over the past however many games, and right now I think with Jaren, like, he's going to be one of the more frustrating players that people ever watch as a Grizzly. I think that's just how it's going to be, but you take the bad with the good when you see that last night, because when that guy is hitting shots, his defense changes. Like, he just gets way more engaged in the game. Like, he's not... I mean, you've seen him pout like a little bit, and when he is hitting shots, his whole demeanor changes and his whole game changes in the process.
Well, that is a characteristic, if we'll accept it as true for the sake of the conversation, that I don't like, because just about every basketball coach I've ever met implores their players, don't let your shots impact your game.
Mm-hmm.
Make shots, miss shots, whatever, but play. And so there are going to be nights when Jaren misses shots because he's going to launch
a lot
from that arc.
Right.
Again, last night he took 9 of them. 2 games ago he took 8. And that's a think about what you want him taking, 8 or 9, 7, 8, 9 in that range. And there are going to be nights where he's 0 of 8. Saturday night he was 0 of 8.
Mm-hmm.
And there are going to be nights when he's 5 of 9. Last night he was 5 of 9. I would prefer the defensive stuff and everything else to be consistent, whether he's 0 of 8 from 3 or 5 of 9 from 3. Let the other stuff look the same. And so perhaps that's a work in progress. And I'd be surprised if tomorrow night in Washington, if he replicated what he did last night, if only because replicating it would be making 5 of 9 three-pointers again. And you know, that's hard to do, mm-hmm. statistically speaking. But he's going to give you that some nights, and he's capable of giving you that some nights. And I think what you hope this builds to is the longer he stays healthy, the more in rhythm he gets, the more comfortable he gets, the more confident he gets, that a 22-8 game is kind of what you're working with on a per-game basis. If Jaren Jackson Jr. becomes a 22-8 guy while making an impact defensively, well, then you're not going to regret giving him $105 million over 4 years. He was really good last night, and you could tell how much he enjoyed having that kind of impact on that game, and how much his teammates enjoyed him having that kind of impact on that game. There was one scary moment, though, when he went down where he was in transition and he fell awkwardly, and I'm like, oh, no, here we go.
Right.
And it was clear quickly that he's fine, but when his legs hit the floor, like, go back and watch it if you get a chance. Those legs could buckle.
No, I saw it, and the thing is, too, that was scary about it, like, is it was so totally unnecessary. Like, he comes down, he's frustrated, comes down, fouls. I think it was Jokic, like, because he messed up on the other end. And so you're like, oh, dude, come on.
Like, when he went up, I was like, because, like, when he went up, it's like, okay, this could be an awkward landing. And then it was kind of an awkward landing, but nothing buckled the way that sometimes things buckle.
Sure.
So it was like, woo, he's fine. Either way, good performance. Hopefully the next one will be similarly good. Ja Morant added 18 points, 8 assists, 8 rebounds, and another high-level highlight with that 360 layup. He's now averaging, if you keep in track, 27.0 points per game. That's tied for fourth in the NBA.
Crazy.
And the only players in the world who play in the NBA who are averaging more points than Ja Morant right now are Paul George, Kevin Durant, and Giannis Antetokounmpo.
All non-point guards.
All future Hall of Famers?
Yep.
Yeah, that's where we're at.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, and he only got 18 last night. I say only 18 in quotes, but still averaging 27. And there's only three players in the NBA averaging more points right now. Paul George, Kevin Durant, Giannis Antetokounmpo. Three future Hall of Famers, two former MVPs. And so the Grizzlies are now 5-3 overall, 3-1 at home, heading into tomorrow night's game at Washington. They're currently tied for third in the West with the Lakers and the Mavericks. Their offensive rating is 109.8. That ranks 7th in the NBA. That's good. Now the bad news. The defensive rating is 112.6. That ranks, want to take a guess?
I'm going to say not dead last, but I bet it's like close to top five or close to bottom five.
You should have said dead last.
Really?
Dead last in the NBA.
Oh, man, that's no good.
Their defensive rating is dead last in the NBA, 30th out of 30, which means their net rating is minus 2.8. That ranks 22nd in the NBA. So that stuff isn't great. But regardless, 538 now projects the Grizzlies to finish 45-37, which would double as 7th in the Western Conference standings. That's where they're projected to finish now, 45-37, because this 5-3 start is not just a 5-3 start. It's a 5-3 start against wins over some teams that are supposed to be good.
For sure.
Including the last two wins. So current projected record, according to 538, 45-37. And that, by the way, is a projection that is 14 games better than the Pelicans, who lost again last night.
Dude, isn't it crazy that, like, the season just started, and they're getting close to their season being almost done.
Like, we had Bobby Marks on yesterday, and Bobby was like, you know, you only have to get to 10, and he thinks that that's not going to be a number that's hard to get to even after this 1-8 start. But I think it's hard to get to.
Man, 1-8? Like, because again, like, that team's shown you nothing to suggest they're going to go on some glorious run. Like, they're going to take, even if they get better, they're still going to take losses. Like, it's just, they're digging themselves a huge hole.
Well, how about this? For years now, literally years, plural, people have expected New Orleans to be good,
mm-hmm.
but they haven't been good. My point being this, like, last year, 10th in the West was 6 games under 500.
Yeah.
Okay? And the Spurs were 33-39. 6 games under 500. Let's say that 10th in the West is 6 games under 500 again. Well, they're already 7 games under. And who knows when Zion's coming back? Brandon Ingram's out right now. To get to 6 games under 500 at this point, they got to play above 500 the rest of the way.
Yeah.
They doing that?
I don't think so.
I'd be surprised. I'd be surprised. They might just be gone, like out of the way. And by out of the way, I mean out of the Grizzlies' way.
Right.
This is a team that is supposed to be competing with the Grizzlies for 7, 8, 9, 10. But what if they're not doing that at all? What if ultimately they're competing with the Rockets and the Thunder?
Mm-hmm.
What if in reality they're competing at the bottom of the West for a top three pick more than they're competing for a playoff spot with the Grizzlies? So that's another encouraging thing for the Grizzlies to start the season. Not only are the Grizzlies off to a great start, but one of the teams that is annually thrown in their area of the Western Conference standings by computers and humans alike, well, that team is off to a horrific start that is probably going to be tough to overcome. At least it looks that way right now. Stuart Mandel covers college football for The Athletic. He'll join me next. You listen to The Gary Parrish Show. We're on 92.9 FM ESPN.
Guests appear on the Smile Center Hotline. Now, back to The Gary Parrish Show on 92.9 FM ESPN.
Run. Here come the menaces to sobriety, like what? Super thuggers dumping run, on the cut.
Wait the ton, hit the drum. Explosive story at ESPN.com earlier today by Baxter Holmes, who covers the NBA. It's focused on Robert Sarver, the owner of the Phoenix Suns, the owner at least for now. This might be the type of thing that forces another ownership change in that league. I'll give you some details on that in the next segment. Jeff Coggins will be here at 5 o'clock, but right now he's the editor-in-chief of the college football department at The Athletic. It's Stuart Mandel making the big interview.
Award-winning writers, athletes, coaches, the biggest names in sports. It's the Gary Parrish Show Big Interview, presented by The Wing Guru, online at thewingguru.com.
So, Sue, a lot of stuff to get to. I appreciate your time. I want to start with this. Kenneth Walker III is a young man from Arlington, Tennessee, which is just on the outskirts of Memphis. And you guys at The Athletic have conducted a straw poll. And at this moment, he is the runaway leader to win the 2021 Heisman Trophy. Obviously, a lot of things can change between now and when those votes have to be due, but just how good of a position is Kenneth Walker III at this moment to maybe bring a Heisman Trophy back to the Memphis area?
Well, you know, I think he is in a position to break that stranglehold that quarterbacks have had recently on the Heisman. I know a receiver won it last year, but you know, voters tend to default to the star quarterback for the best team sometimes. And what's interesting about the way this season has played out is Georgia is the clear number one team, and they don't have a Heisman quarterback or anything close to a Heisman quarterback. And you know, a lot of the other top contenders are like that as well. Meanwhile, Michigan State just coming off this huge top 10 win against Michigan, and they're 8-0, and they're number three team in the country. And the clear face of that team is their running back, who ran for 5 touchdowns in that game. So I think it's he's a fairly obvious front runner now, but obviously, you know, if Michigan State were to go and lose to Ohio State and he got held to 52 yards, that would change things. I think this will be a year where that race probably goes right down to the last weekend.
He obviously started his career at Wake Forest, transfers to Michigan State. Did anybody see this coming? Was this on anybody's radar that something like this could happen in East Lansing with the team in general, but specifically with Kenneth Walker III?
We had heard he was really good. We started a transfer portal tracker on The Athletic this summer, ranking the top 50 guys that were coming in. He was really high on that list, but no, I don't think anybody could have predicted that this guy who was not even necessarily the primary running back at Wake Forest would be leading the country in rushing. Mel Tucker has done a great job there of, he did not, it's like he inherited a ready-made roster. They had to rebuild that roster, and he's done a great job of using the transfer portal to do that. Kenneth Walker is the most high profile of those guys, the biggest impact guy, but there's a lot of other transfers playing key roles for Michigan State as well.
Talking to Stuart Mandel from The Athletic. The college football playoff rankings were unveiled a few nights ago. No surprise, Georgia at one. Was it somewhat surprising to you that Alabama was two?
By the time the show kicked off, I had pretty much talked myself into Alabama as number two. When the A&M game happened at the time, because A&M had lost, I believe, its first two SEC games, it seemed like a bad loss for Alabama. But here we are all these weeks later, and A&M is 6-2 and ranked in the top 15. And I know the way the committee operates, who you beat matters a lot more than who you lost to them. And so I think losing on a last-second field goal on the road to A&M is one of those kind of losses they don't even care about. They just kind of, you know, downplay it and say, well, look at all these good teams that Alabama has beaten.
Is the philosophy of who you beat is a lot more important than who you lose to inherently slanted against the Cincinnati's of the world, because Cincinnati will never have as many good or great wins as Alabama. It can have a win better than any of Alabama's wins, perhaps at Notre Dame, but it will never have a quantity of them, and it just seems like a possible flaw in the process.
Yeah, well, the problem for Cincinnati and for other group of five teams is that in the BCS, it was, I mean, completely up to the Harris poll voters and the coaches poll voters how to rank the teams based on their own, whatever their philosophy is. And we saw Boise State rise very high one year. TCU rose very high one year when they were still in the Mountain West. But the selection committee is modeled exactly after the basketball committee, and it's so much about strength of schedule. That just gets hammered home, strength of schedule. And to your point, Cincinnati did play a game at Notre Dame and won that game, and that's great. But after that, they are just not going to have a schedule like the Power 5 teams they're being compared to. And the selection committee chairman, Gary Barta, was frankly pretty dismissive and blunt and dismissive of Cincinnati's schedule. It doesn't help them, I don't think, that the AAC this year is just not as good as it has been recently. There's really only three teams worth talking about in that conference this year. So, yeah, the system is very, very hard for a group of five team. And this one in particular, I mean, if beating a top 10 Notre Dame team on the road and looking at a possible second straight undefeated regular season and it isn't enough, I don't know what is.
Do you think there is a realistic pathway to this playoff for Cincinnati, or will they just get left out like every other group of five undefeated team does?
There's a pathway, but it's going to involve, they're going to need a lot of help. They're going to need teams to fall by the wayside. They need Oregon to suffer a second loss. They need, ideally the Big 12 would beat each other up and the champ would end up having a second loss. And then I think what would be just the controversy of the century is if it came down to Alabama losing in the SEC championship game and having two losses and the committee saying that's still better than undefeated Cincinnati. Boy, would the people be ticked off about that. They can get there, but it's not going to be so much them passing teams who keep winning. They need the teams in front of them to lose.
Talking to Stuart Mandel from The Athletic. He's on Twitter at SL Mandel. Conference commissioners are meeting again today, or have met today, to discuss a college football playoff, and we can't seem to reach any sort of agreement on 8 or 12, even though just a few months ago, we were in agreement on 12. Just sort of catch us up for the people who maybe haven't followed today's developments. What has happened today in these meetings?
It seems like what happened in today's meetings is nothing.
Right.
they got together for a day and decided when the next meeting will be. They're at a stalemate, and it's all because of the SEC getting Texas and Oklahoma. I really feel like before that, everybody was feeling pretty good about that 12-team proposal. And then there was just this perception that Greg Sankey pulled a fast one on everybody because he was on the working group that authored that 12-team proposal alongside Bob Boolsby of the Big 12. And he takes two of their teams, and everybody freaked out and said, wait, 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 we have to go back to the drawing board because we don't like how this went down. And now you've got a few conferences, and I think it's the Alliance conferences, who are saying, well, as long as we're looking at this again, let's look at 8. And that's fine. I mean, I think if they had said that from the beginning, I think most of us, you know, prior to June, assumed that if the playoff expanded, it would go to 8. But this is a very backward process that you go and unveil 12 to everybody and then try to walk it back. I do think it'll eventually end up at 12. I just don't know how soon that will be.
Is the Alliance, as they call themselves, are they really willing? Because as you pointed out on Twitter, you know, the ACC, Big 12, Pac-12, they need an expanded playoff more than the SEC does. Are they willing to go against their own interest just to punish the SEC? Because that appears like they're at least considering doing that.
I think that it comes down to the main. It is somewhat out of spite, but it's also TV is a big factor in this. And part of that resentment towards Sankey is the fact that the SEC has this huge deal with ESPN. The Big Ten, Fox is a partner. Pac-12, Fox is a partner. They want there to be multiple bidders for the next TV contract. They don't want to just hand over a 12-team playoff to ESPN. And from a business standpoint, that makes absolute sense. But from a football standpoint, I mean, I don't personally think Oregon's going to run the table, so I think the Pac-12 is going to miss the playoff again. Can they really afford to go 5 more years of that? There's already such a stigma from that conference, which hasn't made it to the playoffs since 2016. What if they don't make it again till 2026? I'm sure they've thought about that, and they're weighing that against the money part of it. I think they are, you know, like you said, I think they are going against their best interests to slow this process down.
Wrap it up here with Stuart Mandel from The Athletic. Last thing before I let you go, certainly the most entertaining college football story of the week originated in Austin, Texas, where a man I'd never heard of until his his girlfriend's monkey allegedly bit a trick-or-treater. Jeff Banks has been the center of a lot of attention and a lot of jokes. His backstory gets told, and I'm not sure if every detail is true, but it's obviously the type of story that certainly paints an unflattering picture. I say all that to ask you this. This guy's 46 years old, and there was some thought that he would be, and you'd know this way better than I, a candidate to be a Division I head coach someday. Does this type of incident that leads to the entire world realizing that this man, you know, reportedly left his family for a stripper named the Pole Assassin, does that make it a deal breaker, like a non-starter? Like,
yeah,
you can't hire that guy because when you introduce him, you're just getting goofed on the whole time.
Prior to this whole thing, I knew who Jeff Banks was because he's considered such a great recruiter, and he was for Nick Saban at Alabama. And the hilarious thing is, the job he's been most, before this, the head coaching job he was being linked to the most was Washington State,
right?
Because he's a former Mike Price Washington State player, and I believe an assistant there. And Washington State just went through this thing with Nick Rolovich, where they couldn't have possibly imagined when they hired him that they'd end up having to fire him for refusing to comply with the vaccine mandate. So, yeah, I think he just got taken off the table for that. Washington State needs to make the least controversial hire possible.
What a world. That's Stuart Mandel from The Athletic. Make sure you're reading him at The Athletic. Make sure you're subscribed. I am. It is worth your money, I promise you. He's on Twitter at SL Mandel, at SL Mandel. Stu, thanks for being here, buddy. I always appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, Gary.
All right. That's Stuart Mandel from The Athletic. What a wild turn of events. Like, we talked about this earlier in the week, but, like, he might have really been in play at Washington State, at his alma mater, be the head coach. And the previous head coach made $3 million a year. So this isn't just about reaching a lifelong dream to become a Division I head coach and perhaps at your alma mater. It's like $3 million a year.
Yeah.
And I know he makes great money at Texas, but I think it's about a third of that. You know, you go from making $30 million a year to $33 million a year, it's not that big of a difference.
Mm-hmm.
1 to 3, that's a big difference.
Yes.
1 to 3 matters. And I'm with Stu on this. I don't think you can hire him. Just because you can't hire him.
Why?
Well, first off, your previous coach just embarrassed you as a university.
That's true.
Like, you're an institution of higher learning who had a football coach who refused to comply with a vaccine mandate because of what appeared to be conspiracy theories.
I mean, it's the West Coast. Like, they're a little more relaxed out there.
Yeah, but certainly more relaxed. But these presidents, these university presidents,
I'm kidding.
They are mostly serious people,
right?
You know?
Yeah, they're not going to take too kindly to Pole Assassin,
yeah,
I don't think.
And so, like, you saw the Washington State University president when they had to announce the firing of Rolovich, like, he was embarrassed, mm-hmm, that he had to do this. He actually said, more or less said, this is an embarrassing day.
Right.
And this entire deal has been embarrassing. We have provided our football coach with health officials, scientists, doctors, and, again, I'm paraphrasing here, but the impression we got from our football coach is that he was overwhelmed with nonsensical conspiracy theories that put us in a position where we had no choice but to fire him. We didn't want to fire our football coach over this. It never occurred to us that we'd have to. But he was so in it, man, and with these wild ideas, that we had to fire him. It was embarrassing as a university, embarrassing for me as the person who hired him. So you can't go from that to 2 months later introducing the pole assassin's boyfriend as your next head coach.
I think that's true.
I mean, like, there's somebody in the room, even if, like, the athletic director was like, he's the right guy. And the associate athletic director was like, I'm telling you, he's the right guy. Somebody in a position of power there is just going to step up and say, can't do it.
Right.
Even if you told me this guy's going to win us a Pac-12 title within 4 years, we cannot hire the pole assassin's boyfriend.
I just don't want to live in a world where that can't happen, GP.
I mean, I really do think this story coming to the forefront of the college sports world earlier this week cost this man the opportunity to, at the very least, the opportunity to be the head coach at his alma mater and make $3 million a year. I don't know that he'd ever gotten the job, because here's the truth. We talked about this earlier in the week as well. Whether this story ever comes out and starts trending on Twitter that he's living with and in a relationship with a woman who describes herself as the pole assassin, former stripper, who owns a monkey. A man's dating a stripper who owns a monkey.
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing funnier. Even if it never comes to Twitter and social media and as big of a deal as it's become this week, a search firm sniffs that out immediately. So there's a scenario where Washington State's interested in hiring him. They sit down with the search firm. First thing the search firm says is, do you know his family story? Well, I know he's divorced, but yeah, do you know what led to the divorce? Do you know who he's with now? Are you comfortable with these things? Because this is part of his story. And it might be, you know, it might speak to his character as well, although I'm in no position to speak on that. But, like, are you comfortable with the story? And I think most universities would probably say, nah, let's not do this. On the other hand, coaches with all sorts of wild personal lives are currently flourishing in both college football and college basketball. So maybe if it's not a nationally known thing. But once it becomes a nationally known thing, that's game, set, match, bro.
Yeah.
You better just settle in and be the best special teams coach you can be at Texas. Sarkisian was asked about it, by the way.
And?
He was asked if it's a distraction. And he said that's a personal matter. It's not a distraction at all.
Oh, okay.
He left it right.
Good answer.
It's about the only answer he could provide. The halfway point of the NFL season is here, and FanDuel Sportsbook wants you to get the most out of every play. That's why they're giving everyone a $10 risk-free bet every week. And Thursday night is a great opportunity to give it a try. All you got to do is bet a same-game parlay bet with three legs or more. And if your bet doesn't win, FanDuel will pay you back up to $10. So, like, let's look at Sunday's schedule. Titans-Rams in Inglewood might take Tennessee on the road, so we could go Titans plus the points, Titans over, and a Matt Stafford under passing yards bet. That's a same-game parlay. It could make Sunday a lot of fun. As you know, FanDuel is America's number one sports book. The reason I love it is because it's easy to use, it's safe and secure, and they have fast payouts. So fast that you can get your winnings in as little as 2 hours. Obviously, there's no feeling like nailing a same-game parlay bet, so lock in yours, FanDuel Sportsbook, and get up to $10 back if your bet doesn't win. And if you're new to FanDuel, sign up with promo code Gary to also receive 30-1 enhanced odds on either team to win during Sunday afternoon showdown between the Packers and the Chiefs. You can win $150 on just a $5 bet. That's promo code Gary, G-A-R-Y, at FanDuel Sportsbook, which is an official partner of Odyssey and this station. Must be 21 or older and present in Tennessee. Refund issued is non-withdrawable site credit that expires in 7 days. Max refund, $10. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Same game parlay available for multiple sports in all states on mobile and web. And if you've got a gambling problem, call Tennessee Redline at 1-800-889-9789. Some details are starting to emerge about the 23-year-old woman who was killed by Henry Ruggs on early Tuesday morning. We knew her name yesterday. Now we've got pictures, her backstory. I'll tell you more about that tragedy, awful situation next. You listen to The Gary Parrish Show. We're on 92.9 FM ESPN.
Guests appear on the Smile Center Hotline. Now, back to The Gary Parrish Show on 92.9 FM ESPN.
Okay, now they got me wanna rap again. Heal the wound and then you stab me in my back again. You the type to play the joke and try to hide your hand. Not the type to come around and try to play your friend. You the type to cut the grass and snake your bestest man. I'm the type to close the deal and cut my then. See me in person, I look like a ghost. See me in person, I look like a ghost. You wanna come in and play with the goat? You wanna come in and play with the goat?
Body.
All you rap sound like me. Can't tell who is who. You got no real identity. Can't tell you from you. Price went up.
Yeah.
Angel investor.
Yeah.
Price went up. Angel
okay,
investor.
Okay.
I'm not okay.
Not okay.
Think you're good. It's not okay. 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 Not okay.
Listen to the Jeff Calkins show this morning. He explained how he had just read a story that said 75% of people who visit Starbucks get cold coffee as opposed to hot coffee, which was a surprising number for me. I would have never guessed that until I heard Jeff Calkins say it earlier today. So I will ask him. He's Harvard educated. I'll ask him, to what does he attribute that fact? Why are people out here buying lots of cold coffee and not nearly as much hot coffee? Jeff Calkins will join me in the next segment, but right now I got four stories I'd like to discuss.
Four stories at 444. Brought to you by Delta Dental of Tennessee. Covering your smile. Four notable stories at 444. Gary tends to lose focus, start telling stories, and forget what he wanted to talk about at certain points every afternoon. So we've developed a device that ensures he'll touch on important things you need to know each day at this time. This is GP's four notable stories at 444. Story number one.
More details have emerged about the traffic accident. I guess that's the nicest way you can put it. In Las Vegas early Tuesday, where Henry Ruggs, now former Las Vegas Raiders receiver, killed a 23-year-old woman named Tina Tinter. I think we knew her name this time yesterday. We didn't know much more. What we know now is that she was 23 years old. She worked at Target, and she was a Serbian immigrant who had lived in that neighborhood, because this was a residential area where this maniac was driving 156 miles per hour drunk. 156. She's just a few miles from her home. And the story, apparently, is that her and her one of her best friends was also, they were both Serbian immigrants that met here in the country. And they spent time together a lot and, like, both loved their dogs. And they would just walk their dogs and talk all the time. And so the story that I've read is that they were walking their dogs really late at night, hanging out, talking, just being cool. And then Tina Tinter took her friend home, dropped her off around 3:30 or so. And was on her way home and just miles away from her home when Henry Ruggs hit her from behind after driving 156 miles per hour and sending her vehicle then, do you see this, 570 feet?
Well, I watched the video and it was extremely disturbing. But yeah, you can tell that the cars are like super far apart.
570 feet. Think about this. Like your normal baseball field. It's going to be like 330 down the line. This is 570.
Mm-hmm.
That's how far her car went after he hit it. And the reports from witnesses, because very quickly people were on the scene because it was a
fiery car wreck.
Loud, fiery
I'm
car
sure,
wreck.
I'm sure, yeah.
So people, including like a security guard in an apartment complex nearby, are rushing to see what happened and to see if they could help. And they said when the car came to a stop, she was inside screaming. She was still alive. And she burned up.
Good.
She could not get out, and nobody could get her out. Because the car, and if you watched the video today that TMZ posted, you saw it. It wasn't just like it was engulfed in flames. Like every 30 seconds or so, you'd hear like a bang.
Explosion, yeah.
An explosion. And like at some point, people are scared to get close to it. Mm-hmm. Plus at that point, there's nothing you can do. This woman burned alive because he was driving 156 miles per hour drunk. And I still haven't been able to come up with a good explanation for why you're doing that, unless you're just maybe wired to do that, which would make me think, how have you not killed somebody or yourself previously? Like, what would be, and he hasn't offered any explanation to authorities. The police report says that they asked him, do you remember what happened? And he said no. So he was twice the legal limit. He could have been blacked out drunk, I guess. But if you're blacked out drunk, doesn't somebody in the car with you tell you? Like, if you were in the car with somebody and they're driving 156, which I've never even been close to. I mean, I've seen 100, you know? But 156, that seems so, like, that anybody would be terrified to be in the passenger seat with somebody driving 156. Wouldn't you, hey, stop, slow down, you're going to kill us. Like, wouldn't that come up?
Yes.
So what is going on in that car between him and his girlfriend that they're driving 156? I have nothing to tie this to. Like, right now that remains a mystery. Why was he driving 156 miles per hour? Because, honestly, if I were trying to drive drunk home at 3:40 in the morning, I'd be two hands, 5 miles below the speed limit, doing my best. So what makes him go to the other extreme, 156? Only thing I can come up to is I wonder if he's in some sort of dispute with the girlfriend.
Maybe so.
And it's like, I'll kill us both. You know, like, people get wild, you know?
Yes, right, right.
That's the only thing that even...
And you saw the video. Like, he's on the curb crying hysterically, like, right after it happens. Like, he's... Yeah.
Yeah.
He probably realizing that he just killed someone because that car, he's looking at a car that's engulfed in flames. Yeah.
Yeah. And he was apparently going in and out of consciousness while he was sitting on that curb, like out, back, aware, back. And you can hear his girlfriend saying, think of, I can't remember the name, but it's clearly their daughter.
Mm-hmm.
Like, hey, think of your daughter. I think the girlfriend was scared. He was on the verge of dying.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it is a disturbing video and just a crazy, awful story. But, like, if that really is, and honestly, it doesn't matter what this woman was doing. She didn't deserve to have somebody hit her at 156. But, like, she's really just, think of all the wild things you could be doing in Las Vegas. And she was just walking her dog and then dropped her friend off and headed home. And, boom, then you burn to death in the middle of a road. I mean, what in the world?
Awful.
So, as we pointed out, he's now facing a minimum 2 years in prison, possibly up to 20. And based on the details of how this thing unfolded, you got to think it's going to be closer to 20 than 2.
Story number 2.
Odell Beckham Jr. was excused from practice for a second consecutive day today, according to what a source told ESPN. And the wide receiver's representation is continuing to work with the Cleveland Browns on a resolution for his future. It appears he's probably played his last game for Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that initiated this is his father was posting videos criticizing Baker Mayfield on social media, like highlighting all these times Odell Beckham Jr. has been open and Baker Mayfield hasn't thrown him the ball. The implication being that he's hating on my son, Odell Beckham Jr. Isn't the more accurate or more likely explanation is that maybe Baker Mayfield is just not that good?
I think that could be the case.
Like, he's not trying not throw to Odell Beckham Jr. when Odell Beckham Jr. is open. He just might not be that good.
Well, and I think you could also maybe make the point, maybe Odell Beckham Jr. is not that good anymore.
Well, I know you can 100% make this point that they're not good together.
No.
You know, since the Browns traded for Beckham, Baker Mayfield and Odell Beckham Jr. ranked 57th out of 62 quarterback receiver duos with a minimum of 125 targets. 57th out of 62. They're nearly the worst.
Yep.
They rank 59th in completion percentage, 60th in off-target percentage, and Baker Mayfield has also underthrown or overthrown Odell Beckham Jr. on 27% of his passes, which is the third highest rate since 2019 of any quarterback and receiver.
Mm-hmm.
They're not good together, and obviously this has led to frustration, but the problem for Cleveland is that it'd be one thing if it was just somebody's dad popping off and Odell Beckham Jr. was like, yo, dad, take that down. And Odell Beckham Jr. was like, my dad doesn't speak for me. But that ain't what happened here. Odell Beckham Jr. seems cool with his dad.
Right, yeah, right.
Like, if my dad was on Facebook saying some wild stuff about one of my coworkers, like, if my dad jumped on Facebook and was like, I hate Adam Zucker, I think he sucks, I'd be like, yo, what are you doing?
Settle down.
Settle down. What are you doing?
Yeah.
So, but Odell Beckham Jr. didn't do that. And there seems to be a real problem in that locker room with him and at least part of the team, specifically the franchise quarterback. So they got a real problem here. And the other problem is, like, who trades for him? I mean, I guess you know, if you're going for it.
That's a good question.
If you're going for it, maybe you go for it. But, like, a guy with declining ability who seems to be a problem in the locker room, I don't know how valuable that guy is. But it's an interesting story in the NFL.
Story number 3. Did you
see this Robert Sarver story at ESPN.com?
I did, yes.
Baxter Holmes wrote it. It's at ESPN.com. It published today at 11 o'clock, and it is the story in the NBA. It might be the type of story that leads to an ownership change in Phoenix, because there are a bunch, like lots of people, all saying very similar awful things about him.
Yeah, and the thing is, too, GP, is like you've heard about this guy being right. like this for a long time before this story
right.
came out.
Right, and then it's yeah. like, boom. But now it's like, I mean, it's like, and this woman said, and this man said, and this former player said, and this former front office executive said. It's like, yo, there's 50, this is like a, it's like a, it's like 50 allegations.
Yeah.
And they're all similar, but different, but they're all under the same umbrella. It's like, this wasn't a slip up one time and he said this wildly inappropriate thing. He just was constantly saying wildly inappropriate mm-hmm. things. In doing wildly inappropriate things.
He pantsed one of his employees in front of the whole staff.
And that's not even like the war. Like,
that's actually kind of funny.
Yeah, not even like, nobody even really blinks at that one. The most interesting one was when Earl Watson was the coach.
Mm-hmm.
Robert Sarver was apparently negotiating a contract with Clutch Sports, Rich Paul. And they had reached an impasse where they could not come to contract terms. And Rich Paul said something that you probably shouldn't say to a owner of an NBA team, for being honest. He said, hey, we're not talking about tennis here, because Robert Sarver used to play tennis. Basically saying, you don't know anything about basketball, so shut up. But by the way, there's a lot of evidence that he knows nothing about basketball from his former coaches.
Mm-hmm.
So Robert Sarver reportedly tells Earl Watson, his head coach, who is also represented by Clutch Sports, he tells Earl Watson, you got 10 days to fire Clutch Sports or I fire you. And Earl Watson's like, yo, what? And he says, you heard me. You've got 10 days to fire your representation because I'm mad at them, or I will fire you. And Earl Watson said, well, are you concerned at all about how that's going to look? A rich old white man telling a black coach he must fire his black representation? You concerned at all about that? And Robert Sarver's like, I said what I said. You got 10 days. Don't take too long. And Earl Watson said, my culture is not for sale. And he was fired a few days later.